listen, I want to, and plus the fact I mean, I go back to Dick Clark, he's a friend of mine. I'm glad to call him that. He's one of the media that one of the least intrusive, if non-intrusive members of the press. I think he's always been straight forward, and appreciate that. Talking, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the press and the media here coming up. But the big question in my mind right now is I have heard from some very, very inside sources about something that's extremely disturbing, and that's the accusation that coaches were paid, I won't say to lose games, but paid by losses, paid additional money by losses.
Right.
As you know, that's in Miami. And Hugh Jackson, who used to be the head coach at Oakland and Cleveland. And specifically, he was talking about Cleveland. And I had Hugh on the program Monday. Hugh was on our program. He very skillfully avoided the direct accusation. But it's well known that he has made that accusation and supposedly has said that he has proof of that. Now, let's just suppose, you know, if that were true, and I will tell you right now up front, because I've said this totally, I don't want anybody to misconstrue my feelings on this. I don't think it's true in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Can you imagine, put yourself in the position of an owner who's done all this all his life to attain what he has,
right,
including a national football team, who could lose it all in one fell swoop with the word of somebody that eventually they're not going to be on best terms. Eventually they're going to fire.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's just beyond anything that I could muster to believe that that's true. So I wanted to put that disclaimer in and first. But what a disaster that would be if it were true. Now, where I'm going to go with you is two things. One, I am shocked that mainstream media has not taken this to heart and really gone after it, made a big deal about it for a number of reasons, which is usually their case. They're looking for a Watergate. Everybody's looking for a Watergate all the time. And number two, what are your feelings? What have you heard? I know you hear a number of things going on around the league. What have you heard about this specific situation within the league?
Yeah, so the first part, say, as far as the media's, you know, coverage and something that we haven't seen, and you're right, I mean, given the gravity of the story, my expectation was like yours, that the investigative work would be done by any number of folks who cover teams or cover sports or just the criminality aspect, because that falls into a criminal area when you are, you know, if you're allegedly fixing games of any kind, it goes beyond the integrity of the sport, the business of the sport being harmed. You're now drifting into something even bigger and I think more volatile. Now, that all said, I don't know that it's a case of not addressing it. And as you and I speak, there could be, you know, any number of reporters digging into this thing, trying to find what there would be in the way of proof or affirmation that there is something to this other than an accusation. And that's what we have. Now, Brian Corey's, you know, very affirmative in his accusation in making the direct point that this happened, he was told, etc. But that's one man's word against another man's word, which is that of the owner of the team, Stephen Ross. So those who dig into this, and again, this story is too big to be ignored, and I don't for a second believe it's being ignored. I think it's a question of, can you find something tangible to the hook that you can, okay, say, we've got this, and we've got the goods. We've got the proof. We've got something. And until that point happens, I don't expect, you know, anything there. And then as far as what I'm hearing, I'm like you. I'm reading and seeing reports about it, but it feels like the story has not changed since we first, you know, it caught all of our attention. It made our eyes really go wide. But since that point, I've seen nothing new about it. I've seen a lot of rehash. I've seen a lot of, well, if this is true, you know, this is disgusting. This is that. But beyond outrage, I don't know what else there is to say about it or offer about it.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. But, you know, of interest, the accusations were made by a couple of guys who were probably greatly surprised that, I don't know how Hugh Jackson could be surprised. I think he won one game in 2 years at Cleveland. But Brian Flores actually had done a pretty good job at Miami. And I'm sure he was surprised when he was fired at Miami. But I think there's some, not only, fire breaks may not be strong enough, there had to be something more bitter than anything passive like that. It's amazing how feelings can get to the point that you can make an accusation that would basically, if it was found true, found to be true, you know, let's be honest, this could crumble the whole league. I don't want to delve into conspiracy theories, but this is something bigger than people realize. I don't think it's true at all, and I think it's I think it's something that will be proven to be false. But it's a terrible, terrible thing to do for anybody. Now, you seem to think that he's held on to this proof that he has and these accusations until the proper time, the best time to go public with it. And now, because Flores, because of the situation in Miami, he felt that it was the best time for him to release all this information. That's why I asked the question, if you had any background information on that's coming out through NFL sources that might be privy to certain information, certainly with the Cleveland situation, or Miami, either one that we don't know about.
Yeah, I don't have anything beyond that. And again, I'm with you in the sense that if you level that kind of accusation publicly, certainly the burden then becomes yours to bring proof to it. Now, in the background of all this, and Kay, we both know this well, if we've been around the NFL long enough, everything, and I know it gets often interpreted as inaction. I'm not sure that every time that's true. When you don't see a response from the league beyond a statement that they gave, but in terms of investigation. Now, they flatly say this wasn't true. I'm looking forward, 3 o'clock today, 3 p.m. Eastern time today, the commissioner has his Super Bowl press conference. I can't think of another Super Bowl press conference that has been more greatly anticipated than that one. I'm not saying he's going to drop bombshells about this story, okay? But let's face it, He will be asked this every which way but loose from a national press corps, and of course how those questions are, you know, how they how much time they allot and who they, because they pick you to ask, and I've been in that group to be, you know, to ask questions of the commissioner, but that will be as interesting as any press conference we've heard.
Yeah, that's great, great point, and we'll look forward to that as well. I would almost bet that that someone is going to bring this out. I can't imagine going to a press conference at this time with all that's out there in the rumor world, let's put it that way. Anyway, that someone doesn't ask a question about this, so that's going to be something to look forward to. Let me change gears just a little bit. There has to be just a sick feeling in Buffalo based on how everything came down, what happened in the playoffs there. I'm sure they feel, and many others do around the country, that maybe Buffalo should have been, could have been in the Super Bowl. So what are the, you're right on the situation there.
Yeah.
How are they going to recover from this, or is it going to be, do you think it might be something that could affect them later on?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and again, I would defer, you don't necessarily have to answer this as a question to you. I'm not trying to flip it, but I do know you've worn the shoes of a head coach in the NFL, and the thing that has stuck with me more than anything, Kay, is Sean McDermott, the Bills head coach, saying that this the way this game, I mean, the loss itself, but I know he's referring to more than that, how it happened, the 13 seconds, the final 13 seconds of regulation when a win seemed all but certain, and then they found a way to lose the game. He said was going to live in his gut, worth to that effect, for a long, long time, maybe forever. And I accept that as the man, you know, understanding and empathizing with fans. First his players, everybody connected with the team, but then the fan base, which is still crestfallen, angry, frustrated, depressed, you know, every word you want to use, still lingering over that loss and the chance, the window that they saw of a Super Bowl run for this team. That's a hard thing to fathom, but my concern, if that's the right thing, Sean has done a whole lot right by this team, and I think he's established himself as one of the fine coaches in this league. But there is a challenge here to make sure that this doesn't linger within this team. Now, there's going to be, you know, there are going to be new faces. Obviously, teams change every year, but the core of this team is still in place, and it's those guys that obviously are still living with this, but I think it's going to be up to the head coach of this team to make sure that it doesn't become something that they can't get over and that they carry with them all the way through into the, you know, this 2022 season. Rather than flipping the page, he's been very good at that and refocusing. And he said this year, after all of the success of 2020, you know, 13-3 and so forth, this is a different team, this is a different year, different team, different year. Well, they were, you know, they started to really click toward the end. They were different. They weren't as good offensively. They certainly, even though the stats say the defense was strong, the defense let them down in the biggest way, very similarly to what happened at Kansas City in the AFC Championship game a year ago. This time, you know, it was worse. And the Chiefs, I mean, yes, there was a lot that went wrong in 13 seconds. You could blame coaching. You can blame execution. You could blame a lot of things. But I also say, you know, that team scored 40-plus points, that Chiefs team. From 0 to 40, a lot of things had to go wrong defensively to put them in a position where the 36 points that you scored, the Bills, aren't enough to win the ball game. So that's the thing that sticks with me in a bigger picture view. And yeah, you can focus on those 13 seconds and have nightmares and wake up in the middle of the night and see it as a missed opportunity. But I think there's more to it than that, and it's Sean's job. He's got a lot of time to work on it to get the refocus in the right place.
You know, I've got a couple of things of interest to start with before we get to the Super Bowl. One, if you heard the commercials there, one was by Dr. Kevin Welch, who happens to be from Buffalo, from Williamsville, actually.
Oh.
Which is interesting. Yeah, Kevin's been here quite a while. He's quite a contributor to the whole community. So good guy. Great guy.
Well, he's right from where I live up here. So, that's great to hear. I did not – I can't say that I knew that until just now, but a good fact to know, yes.
Well, it's just trivia, I guess, but of interest. The other thing, talked to Bill Polian, who was on yesterday, and we talked about, and I think it should be of great interest to our audience out there, about the upcoming or the book that you have that is now available, which I didn't understand, but now available on Amazon and some other outlets. But the Bill was extremely happy about it and felt that it was something that he and you could and would take a lot of pride in. So if you want to take just a moment and talk about the blueprint to Super Bowl,
I'd love to. I'd love to. It's called Super Bowl Blueprints, and it is available wherever books are sold. If you go to Amazon and anywhere, pretty much Barnes and Noble, you name it, or your favorite bookstore. And it's a what it is just as the name implies, the title implies. What Bill and I did, and this is the second book we did together. But what Bill and I did was we talked with 32 football luminaries, from ownership to coaches, all retired, to players, front office executives, and most of them are Hall of Famers. And we put it in an oral history format, so it's about 400 pages. There's a lot of book there. We cover the window from the 1970s, beginning with the Oakland Raiders and Pittsburgh Steelers teams then, those dynasties, all the way through to the early 2000s with Bill's Indianapolis Colts team. So you're going to hear from Peyton Manning and Terry Bradshaw and Mean Joe Green and Steve Young and Bill Parcells and Joe Gibbs. I mean, just to name a few of the iconic people, of course, Jim Kelly, Frank Reich, and it's Tony Dungy. It was incredible to get all this cooperation. And look, I'll be the first to admit that they were great and gave a lot of time. And I know, you know, a lot of them,
well beyond this book,
their participation.
Their participation and cooperation, where they gave us upwards of a couple of hours each on Zoom calls, most of them, was because Bill Polian, the Hall of Famer, he asked them to come aboard and help us, and they did. And they were, as I say, they opened up. I'll tell you what, I'll give you one example. Terry Bradshaw, I want to say he opened up his soul to us in describing his relationship with Chuck Knoll. And it was a very contentious one. I know some people know that, but what he talked about was, he said, I didn't go to the man's Hall of Fame induction. I didn't go to his funeral. But I know he's the reason that I made the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, he spoke those words to us. And then we got, Jerry Jones talking about the Cowboys teams and the mistakes he felt were made then, even as they were winning a lot of Super Bowls. And then Troy Aikman talking about what might have been had Jimmy Johnson been able to, had Jimmy and Jerry been able to keep it together. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that gets into the building of these teams. So, It's, again, Super Bowl blueprints. I think people will enjoy it. You can download it as a Kindle book as well if you don't, you know, if you want the big thick thing. It's, as I say, 400 pages, but it's but it'll keep you busy. And Bill's voice, Bill is the moderator of each chapter discussion. He leads it off, and then my job was to weave in all these other voices so it flows.
Well, that's, I look forward to that tremendously, Vic. We've spoken many times about similar type issues, and so I look forward to that. Of course, you and Bill would have done the best job possible on it. I know that. So, listen, I'm going to jump forward here and talk about this upcoming Super Bowl. Interesting to me, very interesting game. Now here's, to put it in perspective, here is a football team, and I say this, I should preface by saying the National Football League are the greatest conformists in the world. All of the leader, all of, if somebody does something that they feel is advantageous, then they're all going to do it. It's just like the coaches that they're hiring now. Everybody's got to have a young offensive phenom, okay? But that'll change, and maybe in years to come, they'll want an old defensive coordinator. But the point here is that we've got a game where the Los Angeles Rams, people are saying now, have laid the blueprint for a National Football League team to become Super Bowl competitive within a very short period of time by actually mortgaging the future. And what they've done is through draft choices and whatever, they, to a certain extent, they've mortgaged their future of high-round draft picks for these so-called superstars. Now, there's some logic to it, and the quarterback is the most evidence of that logic. He's a very gifted guy from a talent standpoint, but had never been there. But they surrounded him with the so-called stars, and now he's there. Stafford is there at the championship game, which is what this was all proposed to be, Super Bowl win or nothing. And you look at the other side, Cincinnati, and here's a young phenom. Talk about a phenom, now, Joe Burrow. Here's a great story. Somebody needs to pick up. This guy is the second coming of Brady. I really believe that. I'm not saying he's as good as Brady. I don't know if anybody will ever duplicate what Brady's done. But he reminds me so much of Brady in every way, and I'm not going to get into that now. But this is his second year, really his first full year. Remember, he was injured most of last year's rookie year.
Right.
His rookie full year, he's taking a team to the Super Bowl. And when I say taking a team, if any quarterback has put a football team on his back and moved them into the position that they're in now, it's Joe Burrow. He was a young guy just out of college, for crying out loud. But at any rate, it's so interesting to me. Here's a guy, drastic differences in quarterbacks. But what an interesting format to this ball game. How do you see the game turning out?
Yeah, Kay, I love what you laid out there. And you're right. The storylines are incredible. I love the story of Matthew Stafford so much. Just getting the change of scenery. You know, you make that big trade right before the season, and boom. You know, now that is not the sole reason they're in the Super Bowl. They have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and that defense, I think, is really still scarier. And now that Von Miller has kind of found his footing with them, and he's healthy and everything else, and he said it. My team was the Broncos, and he goes, I'm still a Bronco until the day I die, but. He says he knows he's part of something special there with Aaron Donald. But I think, you know, and I think Sean McVay's learned a lot from the previous Super Bowl appearance they made, the Rams made, and I think that will serve them well, and they should be able to, you know, I think, build upon that. And then after that, it's the Bengals with a young quarterback, talented he is, yes, but can that defense do its part to, you know, to keep that, you know, that can the Bengals defense do what the Rams defense is capable of doing? And I'm not so sure. I'm going to say both offenses have enough explosiveness to, you know, to produce sufficient amount of points to get it done. It's up to the defenses to make the difference here. And I'm going to say that the Rams defense will have the edge, and I'm going to go with the Rams.
Well, that's understandable, and they certainly, from a talent standpoint, they stack up. The biggest question to me is going to be whether the Cincinnati offensive line can protect Burrow. And I'm going to tell you, 9 sacks in a game and still win it in a championship-type game is beyond the pale. Can't believe it. Well, listen,
yes.
Vic, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it again. We're into our final break here, but I would love to have you again maybe after the combine and whatever we'll talk about the upcoming draft.
Sure.
Thank you, Vic.
It's always a pleasure to join. Yes, Coach, it's always a pleasure to join you.